From the moment we begin the book of Exodus, we're already being called back into Genesis. The very first words of Parshat Shemot are, Ve'ele Shemot b'nei Yisrael. And these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt with Yaakov. Every man in his household came. Now, the first half of this verse is taken directly from Genesis chapter 46, during Yaakov's actual journey down to Egypt, where the Torah gives us a list of all the members of his household, and it begins, Ve'ele Shemot b'nei Yisrael, Habayim Mitzrayma, and these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt, Yaakov and his children, and Yaakov's eldest was Reuven. The Ramban notes the replication. He says, the reason it says, and these are the names, again, is that the Torah wants to mark the subject of exile from the moment they descended to Egypt, for that is when they went into the first exile. So, this exact verse is being repeated here, for though these are two books, the story is connected through events that happen one after the other. The Ramban, in his masterful fashion, manages to quickly give both a philosophical and a literary explanation for the repetition of the verse. Conceptually, he argues that the central problem in the book of Exodus is not slavery, but exile. So, it was the descent into Egypt in the earlier book that set the stage for the struggle the children of Israel will be contending with in this book. As a matter of reading strategy, then, we should know that the Torah uses the callback as a device to emphasize the interconnectedness of these two books. If the Torah wants us to remember the descent into Egypt, instead of a lengthy exposition, it can use six words from a scene in Genesis as a way of invoking that moment in the earlier narrative and importing its meaning into the text in front of us. Genesis and Exodus are thus connected not only through an ongoing storyline, but also a set of interlocking word parallels. We can track the use of this callback technique as we continue into Parshat Shemot. By the time we get to the seventh verse of our Parsha, we're being called even further back into Genesis, all the way back to the 7 days of creation. Listen for the Genesis language in this description of the Israelite birth rate in Egypt. Uvnei Israel paru v'yishratzu v'yirbu v'yatzmu b'ma'od ma'od v'timaleya aretzotam. The children of Israel were fruitful and swarmed and multiplied and grew very, very much, and the earth became filled with them. Three of these verbs tether us back to the first blessing and the first commandment that God gave to human beings. Pru urvu umilu et haaretz. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The children of Israel seem to be fulfilling the first divine mandate to reproduce, as if they were the very first humans looking to fill an empty world. Our verse here in Exodus has also woven in some additional references from the creation narrative. The word vayishratzu and swarmed reminds us of the fifth day of creation, when the water brought forth swarms of creatures. This language of swarming adds an exaggerating effect to our sense of the explosive birth rate here. Then the superlative, me'od me'od, very, very much, harkens back to the first usage of me'od, the notable addition of very good, tov me'od, in God's concluding evaluation of creation. What a comparison! If creation was very good, then the creation of the people of Israel is very, very good. Having been called back to the good, that primary adjective God assigns to creation, we're now well prepared for a callback that moves us even further back in the creation narrative, all the way to the very beginning. In the second chapter of Exodus, we are introduced to Moshe's parents, a man and woman from the tribe of Levi. Vatahara isha vateled ben, vetereoto kitovhu. And the woman conceived and bore a son, and she saw him, that he was good. And so she hid him for 3 months. It's hard for a reader of the Torah to come across the phrasing, she saw him, that he was good, and not think of the opening words of the Torah. In the first moments of creation, just after God has spoken light into being, the Torah says, Vayar Elokim et ha'or, ki tov, and God saw the light, that it was good. The sages of the Talmud pick up on this connection and bring the light from the one verse into the other. Chachamim amrim, b'shah she'nolad Moshe, nitmale habayit kulo or. The sages say, when Moshe was born, the whole house filled with light. For it is written here, she saw the light, that it was good. And it is written there, and God saw the light, that it was good. That primordial light was the first thing God ever created, and the first thing ever named as good. If Moshe can also be seen to be good in this way, he must be radiating some of that divine light. Moshe's birth thus represents the beginning of a new creation, with his mother cast in the role of the creator. That is a fittingly grand welcome for the future prophet, who will usher in a new era of liberation and revelation. But it's also a statement about the significance of birth itself. Every birth is the creation of a new world, for any one new life carries the potential to change the world. As this child is marked with the good of the first light, the Torah is sounding a note of hope. In the very next verse, however, another Genesis callback puts all that hope in peril. Velo yachla od hatzpino. She could not hide him any longer, so she took a wicker basket, tevat gomeh, and caulked it with tar and pitch, and placed the child into it, and placed it among the reeds by the banks of the Nile. Moshe is thus sent down the Nile in a desperate attempt to save him from Pharaoh's infanticidal decree. One word in this verse takes the immediate danger of destruction and places it on a massive scale. Teva, translated here as basket, functions as a strong callback, for it is only used in one other context in the Torah. It is the word for the ark in the Noah story. Aselecha tevat atse gopher, make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. The vessel that will keep one family alive as the rest of the world is annihilated. That, too, was a story of a world just created and already facing destruction. If Moshe's birth represents the creation of a new world, his placement into this little ark reminds us how precarious all new creation is. Worlds can be destroyed, hope can be lost, the light of salvation can all too easily be extinguished. Moshe is cast into the water to an uncertain fate with all the hopes of the generation on him, just as Noah once was. The people of Israel, also newly created, will eventually flee Pharaoh's destructive forces by rushing into water. As Moshe's basket now floats among the reeds, basuf, so the Israelites will one day be plunged into the sea of reeds, bayamsuf. When those sea waters subside, they, like Noah's family, will emerge on the other side alive, but only after many others have drowned. Like Noah, they will then be given a new covenant, a new relationship to God, and a new set of laws. A new world will begin as the old world dies. The beginning of Exodus is shot through with callbacks to Genesis to indicate that the formation of the people of Israel represents a new creation, an entirely new reality. But the stormy arc of Genesis also reminds us that for every creation, there is the potential for destruction. Every new life is already haunted by the shadow of death. All of this is terribly fragile. We build our little arcs, we place our greatest hopes into them, and we cast them into the water.